that cool off that Bob was telling us about has started. It's only 90 outside.
There you go.
It's no longer 91.
There you go.
You know, I look for small victories. It
That's
doesn't
right.
have to be big.
That's right. That's
One
right.
degree cooler.
That's right.
It is the trifecta. Roger and Denny in, taking
yeah.
care of business this afternoon.
Good to be with you. I do have to comment,
yes.
if I could, quickly. We heard a couple of messages there for the street rods and muscle car event coming to the Kalamazoo County Expo Center and Fairground. I had the pleasure of working that event for like 5 years, and that was in the day when it was just the street rods.
Uh-huh.
They've now opened it up to cars for 30 years and older. So you get the muscle cars, the Corvettes, the Mustangs, you know, that type of thing incorporated in that. And it's a great event. You know, I mean, if you get a chance to get out there. But what my favorite part of the event was on the grand in front of the grandstand on the at the fairground. Is this huge flea market and swap meet. And there's like 500 vendors out there and
mm-hmm.
selling
oh, yeah.
old cars and car parts, but collectible items and that type of thing, too. My son lives and works in Detroit, and he's a Mustang owner, and he goes to the Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise every
Ooh,
year.
Oh, yeah.
And that attracts like 50,000 vehicles, and it's just huge. I've never been, but he goes every year. And he told me, in fact, as far as like vendors, their setup, he said, Ford, their display is one city block. It's that big.
Yeah,
it's that
yeah.
big. So yeah, that's a lot of neat events, of course, you know, but the street rods, coming to Kalamazoo, that's a good one. That's
oh,
a good
and
one.
It's not only fun for those of us to live here to see, but it brings some money to this community.
Oh, it's a big one. It's a big one, yeah.
You've got money if you've got one of those cars.
Yeah.
Those are not yeah. inexpensive.
No.
People have lots of money invested in those cars. I've got a good buddy of mine who has a restored old early 60s Corvette. And back when they merged both the hot rodders and the newer model old cars,
mm-hmm.
There were purists who were bothered by that. And my friend was not. Are you bothered by the fact that they've broadened it to things other than just hot rods, but restored newer still antique cars?
No, I love it, actually, because that speaks to me. You know, that's just the stuff that I grew up with. You know, looking at the Plymouth Roadrunner and the Duster and the Dodge Charger and, of
yeah.
course, the Mustang and the Corvette and, you know, all of those cars. I mean, that's what I grew up with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I appreciate the street rods from the 30s and 40s. They're beautiful cars and what these people have done with them. But I think a lot of it for me, too, is that the people who have the newer cars from the 50s and 60s, they're into authenticity as
yeah.
far as paint color, you know, not putting any stripes or lines or flames or anything on there, you know, that would alter the look, trying to make it as authentic and real as it was back in the day.
Yeah.
And I like that.
My father had a racing background. He was actually in Barney Oldfield's pit crew.
Oh, okay.
And he was the tire guy.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad worked for Goodyear at the time. And so I come by an interest in cars and racing. And this buddy I mentioned that has the restored 63 Stingray wants me to get a 1963 Sport Fury two-door sedan. That was my father's favorite car in his life, and he's mm-hmm. trying to talk me into getting one. Me, I'm just sort of drive something to go back and forth to work.
I had a Mustang convertible, ended up having to sell it, so I went from a Mustang convertible to a minivan. what?
Now, I drive a minivan.
Yes, you do.
It is a minivan. Yes.
A small van. Almost like a clown car, but not quite.
Hey. Almost like a clown car, huh? I heard that.
I had to do that.
I don't know if this is going to work out, Danny.
I had to do that. But hey, I tell you, you know, I mean, it's really neat. And, you know, my favorites growing up was the Mercury Cougar, had the Hideaway headlights, and the Pontiac GTO, both from like 66, 67.
Oh, yeah.
Love those cars. And, of course, the 64 and a half Mustang I always liked. In fact, graduated high school 75, and a buddy of mine, we went out to Los Angeles, and we stayed with some friends of his parents, and they had a friend who had a Mustang, a 65 Mustang, that we got to borrow for like 2 weeks. And so we're cruising on the freeways in L.A., you know, with
looking
this Mustang.
Looking for girls.
Well, I mean, you know, we're out there. We're 18 years old. I mean, come on, right?
What did you have on your mind other than that?
Girls and baseball was about it, really. And in no particular order. But, you know, cruising the freeways on a Mustang, you know, and the beach and, you know, all the stuff. I mean, you know, Dodgers.
You were hot
stuff. I mean, that was cool. That was very cool.
That's why you still wear the Hawaiian beach shirts, right?
It's a hot day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
reliving
that's
those
really
days
why.
Of yesteryear.
There you go. You can't go back.
Hey, it is 9/11.
Right.
And I found, and you and I talked about this earlier, that MSNBC this morning replayed the day exactly in time sequence. I found that disquieting. I didn't want to live through it moment by moment again, especially knowing what we know now. But a couple of things have happened today that if somebody had had their wits about them, they would have thought better of this. Let's start with AT&T. They decided to offer a $9.11 special in honor of 9/11.
Yeah, that's tacky.
AT&T is now apologizing for using 9/11 as a way to remind everybody that they sell cell phones. But what were they thinking?
Yeah, that's just tacky.
How do you head down this road without some sort of alarm bell going off that this is tasteless?
Well, it is, and it's an event that it's one of those things. It's our generation's Pearl Harbor. I mean, that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those events that you knew exactly where you were and what you were doing when you heard the news, much like the John Kennedy's assassination.
Yeah.
Same thing. You know, you knew where you were, and it's an event that will always be with us, you know, for the rest of our lives. And for an advertiser or a corporation to take advantage of that to sell their product is just beyond tacky. I'm sorry. It's just poor taste. It's terrible.
That was my reaction. AT&T tweeted an apology, but they said that a longer, fuller apology would be coming in the not-too-distant future. But you wonder, what were they thinking? Who approved that? The other is the award goes to the Boston Fire Department, who chose to have a fire drill at the Boston airport on 9/11. And they, too, are apologizing for what they did. But it didn't occur to anybody that having a fire drill in an airport on 9/11 was inappropriate.
It's under the file of what were you thinking?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
both
really.
Of these cases. I guess a fire drill offends me less than AT&T's wanting to make some money off of the 9/11 connection and offering a $9.11 special. That is just sets a new standard in tastelessness.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say, to be honest with you. You know, besides, it's just not good. You know, come on. Come on, think.
Yeah, yeah. Those are just two of the things that I found out today that we shouldn't have been talking about and did. 90 degrees in Kalamazoo. Let's get a quick check of sports. The cool off continues.
Yeah.
Bob was right. 89 out there now.
Dropping like the gas prices, huh?
Yeah, right. If we could only save money this way. Do you use the internet at home, right, Denny?
I do.
Yeah. Are you happy with your service?
I am. I have Charter.
Okay.
And they're great as far as technical support, coming out to help you with things. I'm very happy with Charter. Absolutely.
Okay. In the digital age, the access to the high-speed internet is really important to a lot of people. Some regions of the country are still being left out in the cold. And an interview back in February with Susan Crawford, the former special assistant to President Obama for science, technology, and innovation, summed up America's internet as slow and expensive. She said, quote, "The rich are getting gouged, the poor are getting left out, and this means we're creating yet again two Americas and a deepening inequality through the communications inequality." And in this article, and it's in Gizmondo, it shows a map of where the highest speeds in the country are and where they are not. And the map is a surprise. When you look at Michigan, the best internet service is in the northern lower peninsula and the entire upper peninsula.
Which I guess would make sense.
Because they have internet access and very few people using it. Some of the worst, the slowest internet access in the country is in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Because there's 70,000 people per square mile,
right,
all trying to log on to the internet. The Detroit area, as far as the southern part of the state where the majority of people live, has mediocre service. In our part of the state, we're slightly below them in service.
Right.
But like you, I have Charter, and I'm not unhappy with it.
No, exactly.
It could be quicker, but if you want really fast internet service, you've got to go to New Jersey, the southern part of New York State, outside of New York City,
right,
and the rest of New England, but don't expect good service in Connecticut.
Yeah, I see that here, yeah.
And the Washington, D.C. area, as you would expect, has pretty good service.
Right.
But in Michigan, the best service in the tip of the Lower Peninsula and the UP, the area just below that, but north of the population of Michigan, has not quite as good a service, but the middle part of the state from Grand Rapids down toward Coldwater, they have the slowest internet access in the state.
And frankly, I'm surprised that you look at Jersey, Massachusetts, again, parts of southern New York, Long Island, pretty good service-wise.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Manhattan makes sense. I'm really kind of surprised, though, that Montana is one of the worst in the nation. And, you know, a place, a state that's not as populated as some of your larger cities, but Montana, just looking at this map, though, you know, and the color chart.
It's a vast wasteland.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that has to do with the low population that they have, and it's spread out over all that geography. In the UP, most of the population is in just a few places. Marquette, the only real big city in the UP.
Right.
And I'm thinking that's why the UP ranks so high in internet service. But in Montana, other than Butte, there's really no cities of any size whatsoever. And I'm thinking that's why they have such lousy service. Texas, in general, has not good service. The interesting thing in Washington State, you'd think the home of Microsoft, that they would have lots of internet access. The Seattle area ranks comparable to the UP, the inland, less populated part of Washington State has 29.1 gig download speeds or better. And it's sort of surprising there that it's one of the least populated parts of the state that has the fastest service.
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising, too, with California. It's kind of in the middle as far as it's not the worst, not it's not the best, but it's kind of in the middle as far as their overall service.
Yeah, and Silicon Valley, which is another place you'd think would just have top notch.
Right.
And they're down in the middle of the pack in the about 18 meg download speeds. That's not terrific.
No,
we get better than that here in Kalamazoo.
Right.
Well, that's going to do it for this half hour. News is next. If you've got anything you want to talk to us about, 382-4280, 877-382-4280. Well, the big cool-off continues. Bob called it right. We're down to just 88 degrees.
There you go.
Get out your thermal undies, folks. Weather brought to you by Asthma Allergy Centers of Southwest Michigan. For the office nearest you, visit asthmaallergycenters.com.
I would think most of America was tuned in last night to hear the president's speech on the things that are happening and may yet to happen in Syria.
Yeah, yeah.
What were your thoughts, Roger?
Well, I disagreed with him right from the get-go.
Uh-huh.
One of the first things he said that I found aggravating is, I possess the authority to order military attacks. Well, yes, he does, but under very specific conditions, and I quote, a national emergency created by an attack upon the United States, its territories or possessions, or its armed forces. Excuse me, but well, I don't see where people bombing people in Syria qualifies as something that lets him start the war without congressional approval.
Well, now I may be wrong about this, and if we have a historian out there, please correct me. But I don't think President Johnson got congressional approval for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution.
Well, but two wrongs don't make a right.
I'm just saying.
I agree with you.
But... and the same with Harry Truman with the Manhattan Project and sending the Enola Gay over to Japan to end World War II. Same thing.
Well, no, so, but there we had a declaration of war in World War II. President Truman was still executing a war that had been started earlier and approved by Congress. I agree with you. The Gulf of Tonkin incident was trumped up. That was fabricated to justify. But the first thing Obama said that bugged me is he made a point of saying that he possesses the authority to order military attacks. And I don't think so. Danny?
Well, I know. And we have a caller that is going to speak to all of that.
Okay.
For us right now.
And Alex in San Diego, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, guys?
Good.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Does the president have the authority to order military strikes, period?
I believe the authority is there somewhere, but I think what was more important was right after he said that, he explained that that wasn't his objective, to make his interests more important than the people of this country, and said he wants it to come to a vote in Congress, which in any normal situation that would be good if our Congress wasn't so anemic as it is.
Right.
But at least the idea that he's working through the democracy is there, and I think that was an important point.
But the War Powers Act, very specifically, and I'll read this quote again, a national emergency created by an attack upon the United States, its territories or possessions, or its armed forces. Where does he get off saying, I possess the authority to order military strikes in the absence of an attack on the United States? His saying he wants to get congressional approval, that I agree with. He should. But I'm still not convinced that under the War Powers Act, President Obama is correct when he says, I possess the authority to order any military strike I want. You think because he didn't go ahead and do it, and he's saying that he wants congressional approval, mitigates this issue.
I don't know if I agree with him. If this point was saying that he has the power right now, it doesn't sound like he does. As you just read, if that, you know, has the access. If anything were to escalate, then he could have that power. And the whole time I was watching the speech, I was wondering how much of this is just posturing in itself. He's carrying a big stick that Teddy Roosevelt talked about when, you know, he wants the global community to know that there are going to be repercussions. I hope he doesn't want to have to do those things because just like with 64% of Americans or something like that don't want to go to war, mm-hmm. or even mm-hmm. to have any type of military strike. And
yeah.
I don't see how a military strike of any type is going to end there.
I agree, and that number seems to be rising every day.
Absolutely. I mean, it was also, I thought it was a very good speech in the fact that every concern that I had listed before listening to it, he addressed specifically. And I think it was well laid out. But again, it's hard to tell how much of this is their actual thought process and what's really happening on the ground level. But talking about let's work with the international community, I think to deal with Russia is absolutely critical.
Yep.
Oh, Russia may pull our nuts out of the fire here for us. we may get exactly what we want out of the Syrians without firing a shot. Apparently, they're willing to give up the rest of their chemical weapons and give them to the Russians and allow it to be verified. And so,
if that works, it sounds like obviously the best way to go. I mean, one of the only allies Syria has, and for them to, after all this stuff about, you know, not listening to us on certain matters, for them to come out and want to do this, I think that puts tremendous pressure on Syria.
Cool.
I think you're right.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate your call.
Yeah.
Have fun, Alex.
Danny, good to see you back on the radio.
Hey, thanks a lot, Alex. Appreciate
that,
buddy.
Guys.
All right.
I think that sets a record from the most distant call-in, but we do stream.
That's right.
He's undoubtedly listening out there.
They're out there. We've got him out there right
now. But, you know, I mentioned the specific section of the War Powers Act that that bothered me. Four paragraphs later in his speech, he says that it wasn't a direct or imminent threat to our security. So he undermined his own argument.
But neither was Iraq or Afghanistan. I mean, really.
Oh, but totally agree.
You know,
We got into Iraq under false circumstances.
Right.
We got fibbed to.
Right.
And Afghanistan, we were there for the right reason until somebody said squirrel, and we got distracted and went to Iraq, and then some years later we come back and try to finish off what we started. I came away dissatisfied with the president's speech. I don't think he understands what the War Powers Act meant. And I also don't think we have a plan for what if this gets outside Syria? What if Syria starts lobbing missiles into Jordan or Israel or Turkey? And what were we going to do had we made this first strike if that didn't take out all the chemical munitions, and Syria used chemical weapons again? What were we going to do? How do you ratchet up the pressure?
Well, you talk about Syria firing at its neighbors. I don't think the guy is that crazy, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, you look at North Korea and you look at Iran. Those leaders, the diabolical, you know, you know, crazy guys, even they're under control to a certain extent, you know, and I think that those guys are worse than the leader of Syria. And I don't think it would ever get to that point, to be honest with you.
I read an article that suggested it was the Syrian military that made the decision use the chemical munitions, and they did it to hold their president hostage. That once they made him a war criminal by using chemical munitions, he couldn't surrender because he'd go to jail.
Right.
And there would be no deal that would allow him out of the country. And this may not have been on purpose. And that's my concern about how, if you throw matches into a tinderbox, you may start fires in places that you had no intention of starting a fire. And it may have been the military in Syria who made this decision.
Well, no matter who made the decision, the bottom line is they have these weapons and they're turning them loose on innocent citizens. You know, children. I mean, just regular citizens that have died, you know, from these weapons that they shouldn't have to begin with.
Yeah. But if you kill people, in my mind, I'm not so certain I make a grand distinction between a bullet killing somebody or a chemical munition killing somebody.
Sure, death is death. You're absolutely right.
And when you kill innocent civilians and children and non-participants, it doesn't matter how they're killed, you're still killing innocent civilians.
Right, but the world has decided that weapons of mass destruction are not to be had.
And if the world was willing to do something about it, I'd be a happier camper. But the rest of the world, save maybe France, told us, we ain't going in there with you.
Right.
Why does the United States have to, after 12 years of war, why does the United States have to be the world's policeman?
I felt that way for years, and I still don't understand why we get involved in another country's civil war. And that goes back to Vietnam, you know, for me, and I think others.
Yeah.
And the same thing is happening here. It's basically a civil war.
Yeah.
You know, it's what's going on in Syria. And we have too many domestic problems here at home. I would rather see the focus on that. I would rather see the Congress get along and make some decisions, pass some laws, you know, actually do their job and get something accomplished here for the common good, for the citizens of the U.S.
Yeah. Well, if we could have had a U.N. backing for this, even just a U.N. resolution, I would have been a much happier camper. Just
sure.
Us single-handedly as sure. A gunslinger running around the world involving ourselves in other countries' problems bothers me.
Yeah, but that's what we do.
Yeah, that's our style.
That's what we do.
This portion of the trifecta brought to you by Bronson. Their comprehensive breast center is here for you every step of the way. Call 341-8700 to schedule your mammogram. Learn more at bronsonhealth.com/women. Minute before 5, 85 degrees, Denny and Roger in the trifecta.
We're here and wrapping things up rapidly. Want to remind you, Tiger baseball coming up tonight. Here on AM 590 WKZO, 7:45 broadcast time, first pitch at 8 o'clock as the Tigers take on the White Sox. Tigers got a big win last night, so I was able to put the rosary away for a while, and that was a good feeling, but I'll bring it back out tonight about 7:45 when we listen to Dan Dickerson and Jim Price. Call the action for you right here in AM 590 WKZO. Had a ball again, Roger. Thank you.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
Kalamazoo's news, weather, and traffic station is 590 WKZO. Kalamazoo.